May it please the court, Brett Bendistis on behalf of the appellants Mary and Angelo Galantino. At this time, the appellant would seek 2 minutes of rebuttal time. I would also ask if the court would like a brief resuscitation of the facts.
Well, you go ahead, and we'll stop you if we have questions.
Of the facts or just proceeding with the argument?
Any way you'd like to proceed.
Excellent. Thank you, Your Honor. The appellants seek reversal of a Superior Court's lower order, which held that the appellants were denied a right of a purchase money mortgage because of the court's consideration of the parole evidence rule. Specifically, the consideration of the parole evidence rule were that two factual elements of the purchase money mortgage statute, which is 25 Del C 2108, were not included within the four corners of the mortgage, and therefore that information was excluded from consideration of whether or not the statute applies. It is the appellant's argument that this consideration of the parole evidence rule is in violation of the policy behind the parole evidence rule, the plain language of the purchase money mortgage statute, and the practical realities of both legal theories and also the recording statute in general. The overall issue, as far as the appellant sees it, is that whether or not the parole evidence rule is applicable in the consideration of a purchase money mortgage. And the appellants at least believe that the best way to distinguish why it applies in this case and not in others is comparing the appellant's argument with the appellee's argument at the lower court, which, by way of reference, the appellees asserted at the lower court that an agreement of sale that was executed prior to the date of the mortgage was binding as a subordination agreement. And I think the important part that distinguishes the appellant's argument, and I want to be careful with how I phrase this, but in a vacuum, not considering any factual arguments that the appellant has asserted, and we're not waiving any of those, is that the appellant is not asserting today that it is entitled to first lien position or a purchase money mortgage because there was a prior agreement to make us in first lien position. We're not arguing that we were intended to be a purchase money mortgage and therefore we should be. The only thing we are asserting today is that under the factual elements that are proven at trial, under our recording statute and the policy underneath that recording statute, that my clients hold a purchase money mortgage, and therefore they are in first lien position. The policy underlying the purchase money mortgage rule is that prior agreements submitted to vary the underlying agreement or contradict things, add or verify or something, when they're being submitted, that shouldn't be allowed because obviously it contradicts a binding agreement. It is our position in this matter that that's not what we're doing. I mean, I think the end result is similar.
Just to make sure I have it right, you're not arguing that it was intended that the plaintiffs have priority, correct?
Well, I want to caveat that for 1 second.
Well, that the parties intended, that's what I thought you were saying.
Yes. My clients, their factual argument was that they believed that they were a purchase money mortgage.
Okay,
but in a vacuum, again.
You're not saying there was a meeting of the minds.
I am not saying that.
Okay. And I gather that what your side is arguing is that your client had priority as a matter of law, irrespective of contractual intent.
That is correct. That I think that there's a lot of facts in this case which kind of state, you know, who intended what was signed, what was agreed to, what was understood.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, we possess a mortgage that was recorded within 5 days of the deed, that my client was the seller of the property, and that my client provided purchase funds at the closing, and that therefore they are entitled to a purchase money mortgage. I think that there is, and since we're on the point, I think that there is an issue with an argument raised by the appellee and also the Superior Court of that without a mortgage being labeled as a purchase money mortgage, that there's just simply no way for you to determine when a mortgage is and when a mortgage isn't. But the practical realities of a title search indicate that that's actually not true.
All right, well, let's go back to the record in this case. In the Superior Court opinion, there's one sentence that says it's undisputed that your client's mortgage was recorded within 5 days of the deed. Was the deed introduced into evidence?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, that's going to be important to the rest of my questions.
Okay.
I mean, I'll tell you, I had difficulty finding it. But let's assume that the Superior Court said that for a reason.
Okay.
As I understand the thrust of your argument, you start with the predicate that we're not even talking about a purchase money mortgage unless we know when the deed was recorded, and then we have to know that the mortgage was recorded within 5 days of the deed. In this particular case, there was no recital, so we don't know you know, in the mortgage where the property came from. But if the deed is in evidence in this type of proceeding, the deed would show who bought the property, and the mortgage would show that if the same people were involved, that would be a purchase money mortgage absent some qualifying language in the purchase money mortgage. So at least from an evidentiary point of view, it would seem that you'd always have the deed. You'd be talking about the mortgage. Now, to the extent you have the deed and the mortgage, the guarantee case, the other cases the Superior Court relied on, the arguments, all seem to turn on something that was or was not in the purchase money mortgage that would make it other than a purchase money mortgage. But I'm having trouble seeing the problem in this case. If the deed was in evidence and the court says the mortgage was recorded 5 days later and there's no qualifying language, if we go back to the argument you're making on the recording statute, anybody doing a title search sees a deed, they see a mortgage between the same parties within 5 days with no qualifying language, and that would seem to end the inquiry.
I would be in complete agreement with you, Justice Holland. And in fact, I am actually, as you're speaking, I remember that we have a set of exhibits that were submitted to the court for the court's consideration that I can submit to the court if they would like. That does indicate that the deed was included. I am 99% positive that the deed was included as evidence. And I would agree with you. I think that this is a matter where the parole evidence rule, I don't think, factors into it. I don't think that there's any subordination agreement included in the documents, whether it be in the body of the mortgage as the guarantee case, the Koloff case, the Resting case, all state that a subordination agreement has to be included within the body of the mortgage. There's no evidence, you know, I think it's also undisputed to that extent, that there is no subordination agreement included in the appellant's mortgage. Therefore, based on a strict interpretation of the recording statute, I believe at least that this is a fairly simple case of establishing a purchase money mortgage. And like, as I said before, I can submit a packet of evidence that was submitted to the court that day.
What you need to do is look at the Superior Court record,
mm-hmm.
see the exhibits that were actually introduced.
Mm-hmm.
We can't consider it if it wasn't already in the record. So whatever you find in your file is not going to help us.
Gotcha.
You've got to find what's in the Superior Court docket.
Mm-hmm.
Then simply write a letter that says the deed was Exhibit A or whatever, and we'll look at it.
I'd like to follow up, if I might, on
surely.
Question. Your position is that it's undisputed that, number one, the plaintiffs, in this case, are the sellers, that as sellers they provided some financing. And thirdly, that the deed was, within 5 days of the date of the mortgage was recorded. So if a third party is examining the deed record, they would find the deed, which had been recorded, and the date of the deed would be on the deed.
Mm-hmm.
They would find the mortgage. I gather the mortgage that your clients had given,
mm-hmm.
And the date of that mortgage, the recording would be plain on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if there is nothing else but those facts that are all on the record, you've established that those facts are enough to establish purchase money mortgage status. And there is no parole evidence issue. Is that what you're...
That is my argument, yes.
Unless, of course, parole evidence refers to anything outside the four corners of the instruments themselves.
Mm-hmm. That is my argument. And I think that...
Can I just get one slight additional clarification here? If the mortgage, the purchase money mortgage... says within it that it is subordinate to another mortgage, would that have any impact or not? I mean, in other words, if it is a purchase money mortgage in the sense that it satisfies the requirements of the statute, does that supersede what might be in the mortgage itself that suggests that it's not the priority, first priority?
I believe I'm answering your question right, but please let me know if I'm not. I would say that if you have a purchase money mortgage, unless there is a clause within that mortgage that says this is filed as a purchase money mortgage but is intended to be subordinate financing and we are subordinating it to either
whatever,
all loans to the owner, so on and so forth, without that specifically in the copy of the mortgage, I believe that there is a wealth of authority in Delaware that simply states that if that's the case, then the purchase money mortgage would be subordinated, but otherwise it would remain as the first lien on the property.
So the default then would be purchase money mortgage, first position.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you can opt out of the default would be for the purchase money mortgage itself to contain a subordination clause.
That would be my argument, Your Honor.
And which is consistent with the recording statute. You want people doing the title search to see. So, you know, we're using the term purchase money mortgage loosely. I think the more accurate way to say it is if you record a mortgage between the buyer and the seller within 5 days, it would in and of itself be a purchase money mortgage by statutory definition, unless there's language in it that subordinates it in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people are looking for when they do a title search. They see a buyer and a seller. They see a mortgage between the same people, and then they're immediately thinking, oh my gosh, this is a purchase money mortgage. I'd better keep reading until they find it is or it isn't. But just so you have an opportunity to address my concerns, the reason I asked whether the deed was recorded is because one way to read the guarantee case is that you look outside the mortgage if there's an ambiguity. And in this particular case, the mortgage doesn't give a recital on who the buyers and the seller were. And one argument or issue would be, does that make it ambiguous in the absence of a recital? And to the extent that there's the absence of a recital, it would be appropriate, even under guarantee, to look at the deed.
Mm-hmm.
But putting that aside, the alternative argument would be, in a purchase money mortgage, the deed is always litigation, the deed is always admissible because the date of recording the deed is the benchmark to find out whether you have 5 days. So there are two separate legal views of this case depending on whether the deed was in evidence.
Jazan, I'm in complete agreement. You know, I think that the issue of extrinsic evidence where you kind of, again, I think I wrote that it's a paradox of sorts, is that if you're not going to consider any evidence outside of the four corners of the document, you're never going to know when the two qualifying factors of the purchase money mortgage, which is when the mortgage itself is recorded and when the deed itself is recorded. So if those, you know, if those elements can never be found within the four corners, then you've kind of got an issue where if the parole evidence rule is excluding all information, you're going to have a kind of a circular matter of trying to figure out where the when the chicken or the egg comes, essentially.
Mark, well, just to clarify one factual issue that was suggested by Justice Holland's question, and it just may be my failure to grasp. The purchase money mortgage here doesn't state who the buyer and the seller are?
No, Your Honor.
They do state who the mortgagor and the mortgagee are.
They do.
And if you look at if one who was searching the records saw the deed, which was recorded within 5 days preceding, they would see that the names match up.
Most definitely.
Okay, so I get would be by that process of reasoning that the chain of evidence or proof would be established, even though the mortgage was silent, that is, didn't identify the mortgagor as the seller.
Yes, I think on a practical and a legal basis.
So your argument, as I understand it, is in any purchase money mortgage foreclosure, you always have to have two documents, mm-hmm. the deed and the mortgage. And then once you have the deed and the mortgage, the question is, what does the mortgage say?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have the proceeding without having the deed be properly admissible into evidence.
Yes, and in fact, it's always going to be considered. And I think there's a statement in the Superior Court's lower decision which says something to the effect of, well, maybe we're taking a blind eye to reality, but you can't be just a little bit pregnant. And the qualifier there being, yes, we understand that it's I don't know if they're saying it's in the record per se, but we understand that that's undisputed, but we can't consider it because it's parole evidence. That kind of means that, well, then you can't consider anything. And if you can't consider anything besides what's on the four corners, then I think you're going to have a significant difficulty in finding out when things are recorded. And at that point, you can almost never establish a purchase of a mortgage.
But when you're the meaning that you ascribe to parole evidence for purposes of the parole mm-hmm. evidence rule would be any evidence that is not found under, under the four corners or within the four corners of the two instruments, and B, in the deed record. That is, it would have to be outside the deed record as well.
Yeah, well, could you say that one more time? I just want to make sure I'm answering you correctly.
All right.
Sorry.
By parole evidence, you're talking about evidence that falls outside of two things. One, the instruments themselves, the deed and the mortgage. And secondly, the deed record.
Yes. In the same token, I would argue that in determining what a purchase money mortgage is, that standard of extrinsic evidence, considering those factors, I don't think qualifies quite under the policy of the parole evidence rule. We're saying is that we're not contradicting the terms of the document.
That's a different argument.
It is. It is. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear. But yes, I am in agreement with you. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
But implicit in Justice Jacobs' question is the introduction of a validly considerable third document, which I'll call a subordination agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a deed and a mortgage that looks on its face like a purchase money mortgage. But if you're searching the land records and you find a subordination agreement that says, my document that looks like a purchase money mortgage is really not a purchase money mortgage. I agree to be junior to the bank's first lien, and that would be proper also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with that. I think that there's two arguments regarding the ancillary kind of subordination agreement that was addressed. Is one, it's just general extrinsic evidence, but I think in Delaware they're specifically stating that if you want to subordinate a purchase money mortgage, there is you have to include it as a subordination included in the mortgage document.
Right.
So unless that paragraph's there, it's kind of a two elements, but we're on the same page, I think.
Maybe another way to express it would be that if you have what qualifies as a purchase money mortgage, then it's a purchase money mortgage. And if a subordination clause is contained within that mortgage, it remains a purchase money mortgage. However, it is not entitled to statutory priority.
I would agree with that.
Because the intent is that the parties can contract out of the default,
mm-hmm.
but only in an explicit way.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And only in the mortgage document itself. If I understood a moment ago, you were saying that we could have a document that qualifies as a purchase money mortgage and has no provision about changing priorities or subordination. And then there could be another document that's recorded that says that mortgage A, the purchase money mortgage, is hereby subordinated to mortgage B, and that would be that would override mortgage A. Is that?
No, I may have misspoke before. I believe that the Guaranty Bank case and a few other cases that are stated state specifically that if you're having a subordination agreement, it has to be included within the body of the mortgage. So that if you had a secondary document that was recorded with the mortgage, I don't believe that that would subordinate the purchase money mortgage under the laws that we have established in Delaware. That in order to subordinate it, you have to include a separate paragraph which says,
right, I get it.
Yes.
But then it has to be within the mortgage document itself, not a separate recorded subordination agreement.
Yes, that is correct, Justice Breyer.
Okay.
You have a minute left. Do you want to save that?
I will save that for rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, James Harker. I'm the attorney for the appellee in this case, Mr. Alessio and Nancy Buffone. Delaware is long established to be a race to the recorder state for deeds, mortgages, judgments, mechanics, liens, and other things. The priorities of those items are governed by statutes and are relied on by title searchers, title insurance companies, lawyers, buyers, sellers, and the general public regarding rights related to real estate. As was stated by this court in the Handler versus Core State case, the recognized purpose of the Delaware Recording Statute is to afford notice of the document's contents and of all rights, title, and interests, legal or equitable, created by or embraced within it, to every person subsequently dealing with the subject matter of that particular instrument. Appellants claim that the Galantino mortgage, which a simple comparison will indicate is identical in all respects to Mr. Buffone's mortgage, with the exception of the name and the amount of the mortgage, is a purchase money mortgage. Our position, appellee's position, is that that mortgage is, as the Buffone mortgage is, a fully integrated, unambiguous writing pertaining to an underlying loan transaction. We contend the parole evidence excludes that would be needed in order for that mortgage to constitute a purchase mortgage.
Well, then how could you ever prove it?
Well, I would had intended to suggest to the court language in the case of Maston, Maston versus Maston Lumber case. That case clearly says in there, and I can quote, this mortgage is a purchase money mortgage given to secure the payment of a mortgage price, of the purchase price of the lands described, provided, and then it has a subordination provision.
Well, let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's suppose that the language you just read is in a document. And let's suppose that that is recorded 10 days after the deed. So the person comes in and says, I've got a purchase money mortgage. I just read the language out of Maston. You're defending this. And can you introduce the deed into evidence and say, no, no matter what it says, it doesn't get the statutory priority because it was recorded 10 days later. It wasn't recorded within 5 days.
Well, to answer that, I have a different perspective than the court seems to be leading to in regard to the statute 2108. If you look at that statute, its heading is priority of purchase money mortgage. And as the trial court indicated, and you asked the question, was it recorded within 5 days? The court below decided, well, it may have been recorded within 5 days, but it was not a purchase money mortgage. The reason being is we have to look outside the Galantino mortgage, regardless of when it was recorded, and determine, was Galantino a seller? Was Buffone a buyer? Was the mortgage used for the purchase price, or was it for some other purpose? And four, was the property that's insured or that was secured under that mortgage the same property that was sold?
All right, well, the question that your response to Justice Holland's question raises is, when you say, looking outside, that is, when we're talking, or when you were talking about parole evidence, are you talking about any evidence that falls outside the four corners of the two instruments, including the deed record?
Well, again, I did not try the case, so I'm not sure that the deed is in the record. But assuming that the deed is in the record, I would assume that the recording of the instrument can be admitted. I think that's not the determination, however, okay, the court made.
Let's assume, again, the hypothetical that, there was a deed. Galantino's also granted a mortgage that did not specifically self-identify as a purchase money mortgage. That within 5 days of the recording of the deed, the purchase money mortgage or the Galantino mortgage was recorded. The other side says that's all that's required. That is, those are the properties the characteristics of a purchase money mortgage, and they are established as a matter of record. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, first, they're not established as a matter of record. There's
Why not?
Nothing in that mortgage or in the record at the Recorder of Deeds office to say that that $500,000 mortgage was used for the purchase price. We have mortgages that are given for purchase of equipment, security on a guarantee, or otherwise. Somewhere, the fact and the statutory fact that is required that it secure a portion of the purchase price must be established in the record.
So you're saying that the mortgage must recite at the very least that it's securing a part of the purchase price for the property that's described in the deed?
I believe that there has to, yes, I do. I think the Maston example I gave, it's why I gave it, clearly states that it was a purchase money mortgage to use to secure a portion of the purchase price. I'm not, in the questions you asked to counsel for the appellant, your example was recording a deed and then the Galantino mortgage within 5 days. Here we have a deed, the Buffon mortgage, which is identical in all respects to the Galantino mortgage, and then the Galantino mortgage. I'm suggesting that the Galantino mortgage needs more than the same language as in the Buffon case. I was thinking how we do this as a test. If this was a bar exam test, then you...
Well, you're saying, though, that just to make sure I have it right, that at the very least, the Galantino mortgage would have to recite that it is being used to secure a portion of the purchase price that's referenced in the... And for the property that's referenced in the deed or language to that effect, correct?
Yes, Justice Jacobs.
Is there any other linguistic requirement that the mortgage would have to contain?
My suggestion would be that a cautious real estate lawyer would say, I think the buyer's name was Brady, either comma mortgagor and or buyer, Galantino's, mortgagee and or seller.
Well, that may be the best practice, but that's not a legal requirement, is it? That is, if the deed record would show that the mortgagor is the seller and the mortgagee is the buyer, do you really need that additional language? In other words, is it legally required?
That's an excellent question, and I can think of one instance where it might be, but to answer you in all honesty, I'm not sure that it would be. The only instance would be is if there was some intervening deed, and I don't think we need to go there because it's not the facts of this case.
Okay, so the one fact or the one recital that you have identified, it's a recital that's sufficient to negate any inference that the mortgage is being used to secure something else other than the property and the purchase price for the property.
That certainly is one position I've taken, Your Honor.
And is there anything else? Or does your case rise or fall on that argument?
My case basically rises on what the trial court stated on page 2 of its opinion. I can't state it any clearer than he stated it, basically saying the deed was there, the mortgage was there. It's not a purchase money mortgage. I cannot tell from this mortgage that it's a purchase money mortgage. As I started to say, Justice Jacobs, if you hold both mortgages or give them to a law student and say which one is a purchase money mortgage, I hope the answer is I don't know, because that test requires all of this information that's not in the mortgage.
But why wouldn't the law student say, when was the deed recorded?
He might ask that question, yes. And he also might ask the question,
would you say the deed recordation is inadmissible? I'm not going to tell you. Clearly, I think you agreed earlier that if the deed wasn't in evidence, it would have been admissible evidence. And your argument doesn't turn on whether the deed is admissible as evidence. Your argument turns on the fact that this mortgage doesn't say purchase money. Is that correct?
It doesn't. It not only doesn't say purchase money, essentially, or some provision within the mortgage that says it's securing that.
So that's why the court's questions are engaging you in this exercise. If we all agree the deed comes into evidence, and we all agree that the mortgage comes into evidence, if the mortgage that's being disputed as a purchase money mortgage was between the same buyers and sellers, the question we need to resolve in this appeal is recording within 5 days sufficient to bring it within the statute, or is additional language, as you're suggesting, necessary to bring it within the statute?
I think you've stated the question, and the trial court's opinion was in the latter. Yes, you needed additional evidence outside the four corners of the mortgage.
Right. In the absence of that language being, in the absence of what I'll call the Maston language being in the mortgage, the Superior Court in our case held that simply recording within 5 days between the buyers and the sellers wasn't enough to give you the statutory priority.
That's correct. Yes, yes, Justice Hall. This all needs to be, since the court brought it to my counsel's attention, appellant's attention, in context of the intent of the parties. Now, I realize that we are not arguing that the agreement of sale is relevant at necessarily to determine this is a purchase money mortgage because it stands on its own. However,
how is it relevant to the legal issue in this appeal? If we can't go outside the document, we're not going to get to the intent of the parties unless we go outside the document.
If that's truly the case, I'm suggesting the intent of the parties is not in the Galantino mortgage at all, and you can't go outside the four corners of that to find that the intent of this mortgage was to secure the purchase price. If you're going to go outside and look at the intent, then you have to go back to the agreement of sale, and the agreement of sale says you're going to give me a second mortgage. That's what the agreement of sale says.
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page as far as what really is in dispute here. It is permissible, even under your view of the law, to go outside the mortgage and into the deed record to find out whether the statutory requirement of a recording within 5 days was met. Is that correct?
I'm going to concede that point.
That doesn't invoke any parole evidence problem. So all we're talking about is whether this was a mortgage intended to secure the purchase price or a portion of the purchase price for the property that's referenced in the deed. Correct?
That's the other element of the statute.
That's the only inquiry that's relevant here.
Yes, Justice.
Okay. And for that, your argument is that because the mortgage that's claimed to be a purchase money mortgage doesn't have the Maston language, that it would require true parole evidence in order to prove what that mortgage is intended to be. That is, it would require either reference to the agreement of sale, if that information's in the agreement of sale, or it would require oral trial testimony by one of the parties.
Correct.
And that's what's precluded by the parole evidence rule.
Yes, Your Honor. It's the intent of that mortgage, which, as indicated, is no different in form or substance to my client's mortgage, the Pafones. As indicated in the briefing, and I won't belabor the point because most of the cases cited by both sides is rote law about what constitutes an integrated document and whether or not there's ambiguity. I would suggest to the court that this is a fully integrated document, that there's no ambiguity. In fact, I think none of the parties, at least in the court below, made any of those points.
Well, I'm interested. The implication of your argument is, and my question is based on your experience. You think someone searching this title, finding these two documents, would issue a title insurance policy saying that this purported purchase money mortgage was a junior lien and never bat an eye. They would just feel very comfortable knowing this was a junior lien because it was recorded one day later even though it was between the buyers and the sellers?
On the face of the instruments, yes, Your Honor.
So you'd issue that title insurance policy?
I would certainly question it, but I would. But again, it's not necessarily that. That's not the issue before the court.
No, I understand that. What we're trying to do, in addition to applying the law, is if you go back to where you started with the Handler case, we talk about the recording statute and what you find out when you examine recorded documents. Your argument is, when we examine these recorded documents and we look at the statute, everyone would know this is a junior lien.
Yes, Your Honor. As Handler said, all the rights, titles, equitable interests, or legal interests are consumed within the recorded instrument. If we as lawyers are going beyond the recorder of deeds office or the pathonitary's office to find liens by calling someone on the phone, we've defeated the whole purpose of the recording statutes. It's critical that these documents are the documents that we have to rely on to make decisions on title, not someone else's a phone call or otherwise.
I was wondering, and I'm still wondering, how this whole problem could have come about as a real-world matter. And the only answer I can come up with is that you didn't have all the parties or their attorneys in the same room at the same time when this deal closed. Because if you did, then Buffon's lawyers would know, or at least be on notice of the fact that there was a purchase money mortgage that was intended and was going to be recorded. But assuming, as I guess we must, that the Buffons were not present at the closing, how would they protect themselves? They had a mortgage. They wanted it filed first because Delaware is a race state. But yet their what they thought was their first position could be defeased from them by the later filing of a mortgage, the other mortgage, provided that it was done within 5 days of the deed. So, you know, how do the people like the Buffons protect themselves?
As a practical matter, in the thousands of settlements I've done, a mortgage lender never shows up for a closing. They rely upon the attorney, closing agent, to produce a title policy, which would ensure their mortgage in first position. So the answer to your question is, the only way to protect yourself would be, in fact, either to show up for closing, which never rarely happens,
or to rely on the attorney to tell you that there is a purchase money mortgage that's going to be recorded here in 5 days.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with you that the Buffon mortgage was ever intended, the Galantino mortgage was ever intended to be a purchase money mortgage.
Understood. Let's make it a hypothetical.
We throw the word purchase money mortgage around because the fact it's a seller and buyer situation, but unless it meets those statutory requirements, it is not a purchase money mortgage. I see my time is up. I would suggest only to the court that the mortgage, the Galantino mortgage, essentially the same as the Buffon mortgage, within the four corners of the document, does not indicate that it meets all the statutory requirements for purchase money mortgage. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Help me with one problem.
Sure.
We've gotten the understanding of opposing counsel that, yes, it is appropriate to look and see when the deed was recorded in terms of establishing the five-day time limit. But we still have one other problem, which is that the mortgage does not specify that it is to secure payment owed for the purchase of the house. What do we do about that one?
On a legal basis, I think the application of the statute does not consider that this is parole evidence for the purposes of what the purpose of the parole evidence rule is. This isn't contradicting the terms of the agreement. On a strictly legal sense, it would be a matter of supplementing it for ambiguity. On a more practical basis, I don't think you can say that everything has to be on the four corners of the document, but yet we can also look at the deed and when it was recorded. I think it's got to be all or nothing, and I think that the argument there is, and my time is also up, but that it's kind of, yes, we can do it here, but no, we can't do it here. I think it's either got to be, we can't consider anything out of the four corners in which the recording time would be completely moot, or we have to be able to consider outside factors. And I would also point that the deed states the consideration for the property. So I think this simple amount of logic would state that if both mortgages add up to the amount of consideration stated on the deed, that you would be fairly, any title insurer would know that it's the same.
Proving that by inference.
That's true.
Well, and that's going to be problematic because a lot of indeed simply recite a nominal consideration and put the actual consideration in the affidavits for the transfer tax.
That is true. This this deed does state the amount, and I would, just for my own purposes, page 76 of the record does indicate that the court took a reference of all exhibits that were stipulated and admitted them all into evidence. Whether or not those exhibits made it into the record, I can check. But all 10 exhibits, which I have a bound version of, which I can submit to the court, were all admitted into evidence on that day.
Okay, well, there's a simple rule of appellate practice and procedure. If we can't read it, it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow you need to send something to us in writing that doesn't have anything to do with inferences, that the deed was either an exhibit admitted into evidence that I could find in the prothonotary's office, or we have the entire record here, so I could find it here. But the court has to be able to find it if we're going to rely on it.
That's fine.
And thank you both. The court will take the matter under advisement and will adjourn.
Hearing, hearing, hearing. On matter of personal having been before the Supreme Court, the State of Delaware may now depart to give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the honor of the court.